Welcome back, everybody. And of course, we like to have you check us out in two specific places. Ava, where is the first one?
No, I'm taking the week off this week.
Okay,
Donald
Don
is here.
Don, where is the
first one? TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Facebook.
Plural. Outdoors.
Yeah, TheValleyOutdoors.com. And don't forget the in front of it.
Right.
It's just like the Ohio State.
Correct.
And Facebook, like us, please. Post up there anything you want to. Like big fish or turkey or whatever you want to put up there. It's always a good thing. Speaking of big fish, our next guest, longtime friend, and boy, I got to say, it's going on 24 some years that I've known our next guest, which I had to actually calculate that, David.
Yes.
So
it goes by quick, doesn't it?
It flies by. Joining us is David Walker. He's a bass fishing pro, and I'm going to go over the whole career, David, so you're going to have to sit there and listen.
What?
Professional bass angler, career spanning over two decades. He's been part of the FLW Tour, competed in various major fishing events. He is now competing in the MLF, which is the Pro Bass Tour now. Walker's achievements include 1988 and 2007 Angler of the Year, 2008 Ultimate Match Fishing Champion, 2011 Bassmaster Elite Champion. He's also qualified for 11 Bassmaster Classics, 10 Forest Wood Cups, accumulating over $1.6 million in tournament earnings. Walker is known for shallow water fishing styles, but instrumental in designing many baits through Z-Man, jigs, etc. And his wife, Misty, and their daughters, Lily and Olivia, live in Tennessee. And if that's not an intro, I don't know how else to put it, my friend. Good to have you on, David. I know when we saw each other at ICAST, it was like old home week. It's always good to see a familiar smiling face. And you definitely have got that smile that you never forget. And so I really was good to see you and get you on the show. So I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, well, thanks, Eric. That's quite the intro. Yeah, that was awesome. It was ICAST, you know, the rumor is that, like, you know, every year they tell us that's the last one, but it's always just good to for everybody to kind of get together again, you know, because we all kind of meet in one area, and then everybody's kind of went separate ways, but it's all still within the fishing biz, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So it's just cool to see everybody again, and you know, back from the old E-Team days. It's been a long time.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny. I remember that when this started, Don, when we met, it was when Evinrude Johnson came out of bankruptcy. BRP bought them, and there was 11 of us, I think, wasn't it, David?
Yes, that was the entire national team.
That was it. So it was Guido and Dion Hibden. It was you, mm-hmm. David. It was Davey Height. It was Denny and his son, Chad.
Yeah, Denny and Chad.
It was Chris Gilman and myself. And I forget, there was... Anyway, those are the ones that I can think of at the moment, but it was a pretty elite group of people. We're all sitting down in the room and looking at each other thinking, wow, this is pretty cool. I mean, you know, and
it was cool. It was kind of surreal because we was in the factory that was like had nobody in it except us, because it was like, all right, we're going to put this here, and this is going to be this, and this is like really, like, remember it was tape on the floor where the assembly line was going to be. Like,
it was a book plant.
We were there way before the people were.
Yeah, we were there, and it was a book plant, and then they said, well, this is, you know, it's like, okay, this is where your bedroom wall is going to be, and this is where your door is going to be, and it was crazy. It was a children's book production facility. And in the one meeting room we had, it was like monkeys and yellow carpet with monkeys on the floor. Like, you know,
what were they going to do with this building?
They turned it into the Evinrude manufacturing facility.
Oh,
that's where they're going to build E-Techs.
That's a big
G2s and we were there first. That's for sure.
That was
and last too.
Well, yeah, we were. we were the last. hangers on at the very end, and then it just kind of faded off into distance. Well, sometimes it's you say it's better to burn out than to fade away. Apparently, that was just a fading off into nothingness, which was kind of a bummer. But nonetheless, you come back and you go at it a different direction, and that's what works. And that's obviously that's what you've done. I mean, David, you've been in this industry for, I believe it's 29 years fishing professionally now. That's crazy when you think about it.
It really is. I mean, I had no idea that. I mean, I always felt like, you know, it kind of has a lot of longevity. I never really looked that far down the road. But I'm pretty happy with how it worked out, to be honest with you. How could I not be? Because it's so funny to see, you know, there's like, you know, guys like yourself. And then, you know, I always see familiar faces, but there's also always been such a pretty big turnover rate. You know, like if you look at old tournament standings from years ago, you'd be like, oh yeah, I remember it. So and remember this, whatever happened to, you know,
exactly.
But there's always that group though, that still seems to be like there's Eric again. Hey,
there's the hangers on. Hey, we're still here.
Here.
Well, you know,
and it's fine though.
It is. It's and you know, the part that I kind of thought about, you know, you and I had talked obviously a couple times before we got on here, and one of the things that always is intriguing, whether it's a walleye side or the bass side, is what transitional things have been, what things have changed, and what things have really made a difference. And for yourself, I mean, you have to adapt, you have to evolve, you have to do that in order to keep up with the Joneses, as it were, with the younger generation of kids coming in. And I'm not talking necessarily forward-facing sonar, we can talk about that later, but as far as presentations and that kind of thing, what's always been a standout for me, I think I told you this, Don, one of the last years that I was working with Evan Ridd on the tour, you know, I ended up with a second place angler of the year. And the funny part about that was, with all the trolling and all the other stuff going on, every tournament I fished jigs, and that kept me in the top 10 of every event. And that's why I ended up in, or jig and wraps, something like that, but rip and wraps. But anyway, it's casting a jig or something similar rather than trolling or doing something else funky. And what on your side of the fence, the bass side, is there anything that's really changed and made a difference in your world that you're like, wow, this is crazy how this is done?
Well, yes and no. I mean, techniques kind of show up, you know, and then they make a big splash, and then they tend to, you know, the ripples sort of fade away, and it's not as, you know, it's important, but not like it once was. So it seems like trying to discover what's the latest, greatest thing, because if you can capitalize on that, being kind of first to it, you know, you can really, it can really spike things for you. But I think you touched on something there that was important, that, you know, the guys like we were just talking about, we're still hanging around, still here. And I think consistency is something that goes hand in hand with longevity. And, you know, if you can really stub your toe looking for the latest and greatest, you know, it's great if you hit it, you know, like, you know, the guy swinging for the fences, you hear fishermen say it all the time, like, yeah, you hit it. Otherwise you strike out completely. The guys that hit base hits all the time really are probably make the most out of this. They may not be the name recognition of the day, but they're certainly going to be here for a long time. And I felt like it's kind of what I made a career out of doing. It was a lot of base hits. And, you know, that was I think that came from early on being that. So let me just back this up just a little bit. So 98, the fall of 98, I quit my factory job. I'd been fishing a couple years on the tougher, you know, the top end tournaments.
Yep.
But I was still working at the factory. You know, they'd give me some time off to go to the tournament. I worked out a deal with the owner there, and I quit my job there, but I paid my deposits. So back then you pay your deposits and then your entry fee, you know, the balance was due a couple weeks prior to the event. Well, I had to win enough money at the first event to pay my balance for the second event because I didn't have it. I didn't have it. You know, I didn't tell them that, but I paid my deposits. I'm in all six, but I have to win enough money at the first one to get me to the second one. And the second one, I had to win enough money to get me to the third one. And so I think that's really what probably started my career of just, I mean, I'm making sure I get a check. And so I think that probably had a lot to do with it, starting that off early on. And I know it had a lot to do with the way that I fished early on was being shallow, visible cover. And the reason for that is if you go to a lake that you've never been to before, and you can relate to this because years ago, trying to find places that were out in the middle of a lake took a lot of time. It just took a lot of time because you had to be out there, you had to fish, you had to feel your way around and figure those things out.
Absolutely.
You may not even find a good spot, but you spent a lot of time doing it. Shallow, visible cover, I could run down the lake, I could say, well, there's a dock over there, there's some laydowns over there. I speeded up the process by fishing that way. And so I think early in that career, I kind of set my path unbeknownst to me, but it worked out great though. I really wouldn't change a thing, but you know, what's changed lately is really, really been a huge difference. Like I've never seen anything like it. You know, we've talked about changes, but nothing like what's happened here in the last few seasons.
So what would you say as far as the latest and greatest technique that's out there right now, that's that hot thing that somebody needs to keep their eye open, keep their eye on, or go get it?
It's a good question. I think currently, and you can see it, it's maybe not, you know, something on the horizon. It's something that's current. And that is really trying to catch pressured fish that are getting fished for a lot. And so those finesse techniques, and I always felt like years ago that, and I loved going there, and I got to take a trip to Japan, and I always liked talking with the Japanese anglers and stuff, because the way they fished, you know, they had some water, but there's so many fishermen there. And so they really learned how to maximize what they could catch. And it was through unique presentations or odd shaped baits, things that, you know, we really didn't mess with that much. And I don't think that really caught on as well early, you know, 15, 20 years ago, because our fish just really weren't pressured that much. So the presentations they were bringing worked, but they didn't work better, if that makes sense. Now, I think you're seeing a lot of those trends of anglers coming from areas that have fish that are harder to catch, that are doing better in the events because of that experience they're bringing with them.
So specifics on the finesse type baits, obviously we've got a number of people at various experience levels, but they're going to be wondering what kind of baits, what kind of presentations are you talking about as far as in the finesse side? Spinning reels is generally, that's one of the first things that I think of when I see somebody with a spinning rod. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're definitely going with a finesse rod or finesse scenario. What else?
Yeah, light line, you know, much smaller lines than what we used to do.
Typically, yep.
You know, small lines, you know, 6-pound test and smaller. And I think right now probably the trend is much smaller baits and much bigger baits. So it's sort of, put your lure outside of what they normally see. Like, you know, a guy goes to the lake, he throws a 6-inch worm and, you know, and he throws, you know, what have you, a 3/8-ounce spinner bait. And so, you know, that size is something the fish see a lot of. And so, you know, going down is obviously, you know, going down in size is obviously a good way. But those really big sizes, like you've seen these glide baits and these, you know, oversized lures, I think is a lot to do with that too, because it's given a fish that sees a lot of lures something he hasn't seen before.
Different profile.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you're looking at it, you'd probably say the shorter Ned rig style scenario, that kind of thing, as far as small.
Adding legs to it, you know, changing your retrieves, you know, that's something that I think, you know, instead of just the standard hop, lift, you know, fall, you're seeing a lot of people that are fishing it, you know, with like really erratic action. Like, because a lot of people, you know, you shake the rod tip just to really add even more action to it. You know, you're reeling the bait where that you normally would drag the bait. It's just, it seems to be just whatever you can do to give that fish a look that they're not used to seeing. And that has a lot to do with, I think, with the forward facing sonar, because those fish used to get a break from us. Now they don't. They see, we are after them all the time. They never get a break. And so they're seeing lures all the time in places they didn't used to see lures. And, you know, it's pretty apparent that it's having an effect on the way the fish are reacting to the lure.
As a quick take, we got 30 seconds left. What's your feeling on forward-facing sonar, what it's doing to the fishery itself? Good, bad, or indifferent?
I think it's all the above, and that's what makes it a problem for me, is because it's a tool that could definitely be used to, it can be used for good or bad, really, you know what I mean? Like
people can set up in a spot, they can crush this perch.
You could exploit, the problem is you could exploit the resource with it.
No, I got you.
I think that's the biggest problem.
David, we're going to jump on this one. We're going to have you back. We'll have another conversation about this another time, but I'll tell you what, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. You are just a good friend, and I appreciate friend of the show, and we certainly appreciate you coming on. I think the listeners will as well. I wish the best to you, and we will be talking soon, buddy.
All right. Sounds great, Eric. Appreciate
Thanks, David.
It.
Appreciate it. Again. Well, tell you what, guys, we appreciate you hanging out today, and thank, obviously, David Walker for being here. For Don, myself, and Ava, we are the Valley Outdoors, and I hope you guys have a fantastic and enjoyable weekend out in the outdoors.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.